This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. It's been 2 years since Wake County voters elected a Republican majority to the school board. The majority took as its mandate the dismantling of a long-standing school assignment plan. It was one that emphasized socioeconomic diversity. Since that 2009 election, the Wake County School Board has seen the resignation of its old superintendent, the hiring of a new one, and the ongoing reconfiguration of its assignment plan. Board members have also seen themselves on national news as police broke up protests at school board meetings and led opponents away in handcuffs. On Tuesday, voters decide who occupies five of Wake County's nine school board seats. Also up for grabs, the mayor's job and seven seats on the Raleigh City Council. Today, we'll take a look at what's at stake for Raleigh and Wake County in Tuesday's elections. WUNC Raleigh Bureau Chief Dave DeWitt is with us. Charles Duncan Pardo is here. He is the editor of the Raleigh Public Record. And on the phone is Sue Sturgis, a reporter for Facing South, an online publication of the Institute for Southern Studies. Dave, Charles, and Sue, welcome back. Good to have all of you here.
Hi, Frank.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Well, Dave, let me start with you and take a look at these races and how they're shaping up. The District 3 race pits incumbent, and we're talking about school board now, Democrat Kevin Hill against three challengers, Jennifer Mansfield, Eric Squires, and Heather Lacerdo. Tell us about this race.
Well, this, I think, is probably the most interesting race. Certainly the race that also involves Ron Margiotta, the incumbent in District 8, is interesting as well. But District 3 involves Kevin Hill, who was the school board chair before Ron Margiotta was elected chair, sort of abruptly, when the school board in 2009 was both elected and then installed, and then that very night he was removed and actually had to get up from his chair, move over, hand over the gavel, and sit down. He's running again. He's running against Heather Lacerdo and Jennifer Mansfield and Eric Squires, as you mentioned. And Heather Lacerdo is sort of the chosen candidate of the Republican Party. She's raised a lot of money for this race. She's never run for any elective office before. She's a relatively new person in Wake County politics, but also in Wake County, which is not, you know, rare. Most people who live in Wake County are fairly new to the area. And then Jennifer Mansfield is somebody who was, she was a parent. She was very involved in the last election, not as a candidate, but as somebody who was a grassroots organizer, you know, against the old assignment policy and for a policy would be more geared toward proximity. So it's a very interesting race. You know, the question is, will Jennifer Mansfield, Heather Lacerdo sort of split that, you know, that voting block, and Kevin Hill, will he have enough? And we should also mention that all these districts have been rejiggered a little bit. They've been redistricted by the school board, and the changes weren't major in a lot of ways. Nobody was unseated, for example, but they were changed in some ways that could show itself certainly in this election.
Where is District 3?
District 3 is essentially sort of northeast of Wake County. It's you know, Wake Forest and up that way. So it's a lot of, you know, if you've ever been in that area of the county, a lot of new construction, a lot of new homes up and in there. And so, you know, Kevin Hill, the Democrat, has been pretty safe Democratic seat, but with new move-ins, people a lot in the suburbs, there's a lot of questions as to sort of how this will go.
So as you say, it's just the seat that had been stable, now in flux, and so that's a real contentious race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
Charles Duncan Pardo, the Raleigh Public Record is tracking the spending in school board races. How much money has been raised just in the District 3 race?
In the District 3 race, we've seen, you know, we just got new campaign finance reports out earlier this week, and in these pre-election reports, Kevin Hill's brought in $24,000, Heather Lacerdo about $40,000, and Jennifer Mansfield about $5,800. And we actually have not seen filings for Eric Squires yet.
That's a lot of money for a school board race, but it's not even the most expensive race in the county, right?
No. If you know, the District 8 race with Susan Evans and Ron Margiotta down in the Apex area, Evans has raised about $37,000 and Margiotta has raised about $52,000.
All right. And tell us District 6 now. Tell us about that. Where is District 6?
So District 6 is the Central Raleigh. That's what they call the district. It's kind of northeast Central Raleigh is how it looks on the map. And there you've got Christine Kushner, who in this most recent report has brought in $50,000. And then the major contender against her, Kushner is the Democrat, and the major Republican contender there is Donna Williams. And we actually haven't seen pre-election numbers yet, but in the reports a month ago, Williams had raised about $28,000.
And what's the central issue? What are voters most concerned about in that district?
You know, that is more of an urban district than, say, District 3. So that's really going to be a question between Williams, who is supporting the Republican majority on the board, and Kushner, who's a firm Democratic candidate and, you know, is for the diversity plans.
Sue Sturgis, you live in downtown Raleigh. Tell us about the race there, what district that is, and what is the central issue in that race?
The district that I live in is currently represented by Keith Sutton, who is a Democrat, and he has been one of the people on the board who's been supportive of retaining a diversity policy. And he is running this year against Vanita Payton, and she is a Republican. She is not getting a lot of money, as a lot of the other Republican candidates have been getting in some of the other districts. This is a pretty safe Democratic district. It's a largely African-American district. Both of the candidates are African-American, but there's a lot of concern in the district where I live about retaining some sort of socioeconomic diversity, and I think it would be pretty fair to say that Keith Sutton would be a shoe-in there.
Dave DeWitt, tell us about the race in District 8. It looks like this is where the most money has been raised, and according to the Raleigh Public Record, Board Chairman Ron Margiotta has raised $52,000. Democratic challenger Susan Evans, $37,000. That's $89,000 in one school board race. What's going on in that district?
Well, I think the important thing here is that Ron Margiotta is sort of an easy lightning rod in that district. As the chair of the school board for the last 2 years, he has been, you know, front and center in a lot of the controversial issues, a lot of the demonstrations, the arguments that have erupted at school board meetings. He has been front and center among those. So he has drawn a lot of attention from Democrats. He's drawn a lot of support from Republicans. And, you know, underlying all of these races, of course, is the fact that Republicans only need to retain or win one of these seats to retain its, you know, its majority on the school board. So any one of these races goes for the Republicans. They control the school board. What they would like to do is win more than just one so that they can then have a what they call a Deborah Goldman-proof majority. Deborah Goldman is a Republican on the school board who is not running in this election, but she has moved a little bit more centrist. She's voted a little bit differently than the sort of Republican and or Democratic voting bloc. So if they can get more than just Ron Margiotta elected, and you should say, you know, Ron Margiotta is seemingly pretty safe, at least at the beginning of this process, because of the nature of his district. But it should also be noted, you know, in 2009, there were a lot of predictions going into that race about how it would turn out, and many of those predictions were wrong. Republicans won a lot more than certainly a lot of Democrats thought they would. So because these are school board races, you don't see a lot of polling. You don't see a lot of, you know, pre-election day understanding of where everybody sits. So other than the money, we don't know, and we don't have a lot of numbers based on how people are doing.
Reassignment plan, though, central issue in all these races. Bring us up to speed on where the reassignment plan is and what's the process now for approval.
Okay. If you go back 2 years, the assignment plan was a resolution was passed in that first meeting that it would the assignment plan would be thrown out and that diversity was no longer going to be a guiding force in whatever new assignment plan would be developed. Now they had to go backtrack and sort of go through the process of eliminating the plan, and they did a survey of parents which showed that more than 90% were in favor were happy with their schools. So the new school board has gone through a long process. And finally, the superintendent left. They got a new superintendent, Tony Tata, charged specifically with a new assignment plan, which he and a task force have been working on for 7 months. Now we're to the point now where he presented formally that student assignment plan to the school board this week, next week. And then and this is where it gets really interesting. The student assignment plan uses and a quick description of it. It doesn't use the same socioeconomic diversity as the old one did. But it does use, as sort of a proxy to the proxy, if you will, student achievement, and tries to at least create a situation where there may not be these silo schools, these schools where there's high levels of low-income students. by, you know, allowing people to choose, and if they don't choose, hoping to move people around and students around. And that seems to have drawn a lot of support on both sides so far. They haven't had a public hearing, though. They've had a lot of public information sessions, but a public hearing where people can get up and speak their minds, that happens 2 days after the election. Then a week after the election, the school board is set to vote. Now, that will be a lame – a few members of there will be lame duck members who will be taking this vote. So what could happen, conceivably, if Democrats win all the seats here, that it could – a school board could come in. They could overturn that vote just from a few months earlier, and we could start this process all over again.
And just to understand, we're running short of time on this segment, but you are allowed under the system to maintain. If you wanted to stay in the school that you're in, you can stay right there.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody has a choice, but then ultimately that would mean if everybody was happy with where they were, that there would be a need to change. So if too many students want to move into a school where there are too few seats, and that was their choice, what do we do?
Right. Well, the interesting part then, you know, and there's a lot of question marks about what people will choose and how that'll play out now. But what about when the expected growth occurs and people come in and move in? Then suddenly you've got a situation where there's a whole lot of people who won't get the schools closest to them.
Well, we'll talk more about this, the school board race, the election, and the amount of money that's being spent as we continue our conversation with my guest, WUNC's Dave DeWitt, Charles Duncan Pardo, editor of the Raleigh Public Record, and Sue Sturgis, a reporter for the Institute for Southern Studies Facing South. We'll return with our conversation on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio, talking about the elections coming up in Wake County Tuesday. My guest, WUNC reporter Dave DeWitt, Charles Duncan Pardo, editor of the Raleigh Public Record, Sue Sturgis, a reporter for the Institute for Southern Studies Facing South. And Sue, the amount of money being raised in the school board race is striking. More than $340,000 went into that race in 2009. Does it look like this year's race is going to top that?
It looks like it's definitely a possibility. You know, as folks have mentioned, all the spending reports aren't in yet. And, you know, there's certainly a great deal more interest in this year's race than there was in 2009. So I think most people are expecting that this race will probably set new records once everything is done and accounted for.
And break it down for us. Where is the money coming from?
The money is coming from various sources. You know, there's a lot of, if you look through the spending reports, you'll see, you know, the kind of traditional spending that we had seen in elections prior to 2009 when the assignment plan became such a big issue with, you know, a lot of small contributions. People are going to little campaign events in their neighborhood and contributing $25 and $50, those kind of small contributions. But we saw changes that started in the 2009 election, and that you know, these trends are continuing and strengthening with big donors also stepping into the school board race. There was a real sea change in 2009 where for the first time we saw big donors getting involved, and also outside organizations, what you call independent organizations, that are also involved in advocacy work around the school board, and that's continuing again this year.
And has there been a shift in where the money is coming from? But you talked about big donors in 2009. Was that coming from mostly Republican candidates, and now have the Democrats responded to that? Or has it always been pretty well balanced in terms of where the money came from in 2009 and now in this race?
In 2009, we did see a big influx of Republican money. There were two donors in particular in Wake County that spent heavily to influence the outcome of the school board race, and that was a local businessman and former state legislator Art Pope, who runs Variety Wholesalers. It's a large discount chain that's based here in Wake County. And he was the second biggest spender back in 2009. He contributed $15,000 to the local Republican Party, the Wake County Republican Party, which in turn used that money on the school board race. And it was also revealed after the 2009 elections, thanks to an email that was obtained by the Raleigh News and Observer, that Art Pope essentially served as the architect for the electoral strategy that year that got the Republican majority successfully elected. And once again, he's very involved in this year's races.
But how about the spending? Has that become more balanced on this race or on the races this year?
What we've seen happen this year is in response to the influx of Republican money in 2009, we have now seen Democrats as well stepping up to contribute large quantities of money to candidates. You know, so where you had back in the past, you know, you had, you know, primarily small donations coming in to candidates, now you see a lot more maximum donations of $4,000. That's the most an individual can contribute. And this year we're seeing Art Pope on the Republican side and his wife, Catherine, and also Bob Luddy, who's a local businessman who actually runs a nonprofit chain of private schools in Wake County, contributing directly to the candidates. As I said last time, Art Pope contributed to the party, and then that money was in turn funneled to the candidates. This time around, he's contributing maximum $4,000 contributions to three Republican candidates. Bob Luddy has contributed $4,000 maximum contributions to four Republican candidates. And then on the Democrat side, we've seen a new phenomenon, people who weren't involved in the last election, John and Ann Campbell, who are Democrats who run a pharmaceutical consulting firm, are also contributing maximum donations, this time to Democrat candidates.
Dave, how does the level of spending in the Wake County school board elections compare to other counties and other school districts across the state?
There's no comparison. You know, there's more money spent in Wake County than anywhere else. And even if you look at Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, which in terms of the number of students is relatively similar, although Wake is a little bit bigger, you don't have the same level of contention and sort of equal levels. You don't have Democrats versus Republicans in Charlotte-Mecklenburg as much. You don't have as divisive an issue as this diversity plan was. So it really doesn't. It doesn't compare, and it doesn't compare historically either. You know, the school board used to be made up of people who had an interest in school related issues, not necessarily were looking at a long political career or looking at this as a way to get moved up. Now, that's, you know, in recent years we've seen people do this even before the student assignment. Rosa Gill, who was the chair a couple of years ago, now in the state legislature. So I mean, it occurs, but you know, now you've got folks on there who were elected in 2009, especially. You know, Chris Malone, a school board member, has already announced that he's going to run for the state legislature. It's widely believed that John Tedesco is looking at maybe a longer political career. He's certainly spoken at some Tea Party rallies. It would seem, you know, he wants to get his name and face out there. So you've got people who are more politically inclined and getting involved in the school board. Not that they have no interest in school board issues or school issues, they do, but they're getting involved when they don't have children in the school district or have had children in schools. Now, a lot of candidates do, but you see more that don't.
Sue, you've done a lot of reporting on one of the most generous supporters, and you talked about Art Pope. And in fact, the New Yorker magazine picked up on a lot of your reporting and just did a profile of Art Pope and his spending tendencies. And in the interest of full disclosure, we asked Art Pope to be on the program because we knew his name would come up frequently. And for scheduling reasons, he couldn't be on this program, but we hope to talk to him later. So he can't be here. But I would like you, Sue, to tell us what you've learned about Art Pope's involvement in school board elections. You talked a little bit about the last one and the development of his not only contributions, but his interest in the school board.
Well, Art Pope, as I mentioned, he's a local businessman and a former state legislator. And after he left the political arena, after he left elected office, he devoted a lot of his energies to creating a network of think tanks and advocacy groups that promote conservative issues. So, you know, his interest in education has been along those lines. His organizations include the nonprofit John Locke Foundation in Raleigh, and that's a conservative think tank. He also founded the Civitas Institute, which is another nonprofit organization that promotes conservative ideas. So he's poured millions of dollars into creating this network of think tanks that promotes conservative solutions to policy issues. So, you know, his network has been involved in promoting school privatization by promoting vouchers, which would take public money and put them towards private school companies. He's also a big proponent through his network of charter schools. And so those are some of the ways we've seen him weigh in on education issues. And then, as I said, in 2009, he got involved in the Wake School Board election as, you know, the person who was really the brain behind how to elect a Republican majority.
And it goes back even further than that, I guess. If you go back to 2006, there was a bond issue, which his think tanks, in any event, opposed. Tell us about that.
Back in 2006, there was a $970 million bond issue on the ballot, and that was to raise money for the Wake County schools. As was mentioned, this is a very fast-growing area, and so, you know, there's been a great influx of people from other areas moving here, and so, you know, there's been a lot of problems with making sure that the schools have adequate resources. And so the bond issue came up on the ballot, and the group that took the lead in fighting the bond issue back in 2006 was an organization called Americans for Prosperity, and it was their North Carolina chapter. And this is an organization that's been in the news a lot recently. It is a conservative advocacy group that was founded and is largely funded by the Koch brothers, who are the owners of Koch Industries, which is a privately held oil and chemical conglomerate based in Kansas. And Art Pope is one of four national directors of Americans for Prosperity, and he's also one of the people who's been invited to the Koch brothers' semi-annual strategy gatherings of conservatives. You know, so he's quite closely related to that group. And so, yes, so they were involved in the 2006 bond issue. And they also played, AFP's North Carolina chapter also played a big role in the 2009 Wake School Board election, though they did not contribute directly to candidates, or they didn't pay for any kind of electioneering communications like TV advertisement. They did provide voter education and organizing support for the candidates.
Charles, is there any indication, because we've talked about the fact that now in this race, it seems that Democrats have responded and are now spending, if not as much, are spending much more. Is there the sort of organization behind this? Can you tell from looking at the numbers? In terms of the increased spending, or are these just individual donors who are now giving more?
Well, generally, the Republican candidates are bringing in more money. But we have seen the Wake Democratic Party really trying to organize, especially, you know, around the District 8 race in the Apex area. So overall, it looks like the Republicans are bringing in more money, and it's hard to see, you know.
And not only sort of in that regard, but, you know, they're a little bit sort of late to the party in terms of sort of an organization that's outside of direct giving. But the Democrats have gotten very involved here in this election. Two groups, Progress NC, which is a relatively new group, has been especially targeting Heather Lacerdo, the candidate in District 3, the Republican candidate in District 3, creating a website that I believe is called Queen of Extreme, and is has gone after her and some of the things that she said on Facebook and elsewhere. And then another group, a 527 group called Common Sense Matters, has distributed a number of flyers against Ron Margiotta. That's a group that has spent somewhere around $30,000 overall. And that can be traced to back to a businessman named a Raleigh businessman named Alan King, who and it's somehow associated with a group called the North Carolina Futures Action Fund. Democratic Party leaders have donated to that group, and so has the North Carolina Association of Educators. So we've seen some organization come together on sort of the Democratic side. I don't think anyone would argue that it matches the level of sort of sophistication and depth of Art Pope's organization, but certainly they have come to the party and targeted Wake County School Board District races.
And, of course, all of this is legal. I mean, this is all done legal and above board. The donations have been declared, so far as we can tell, and properly reported. Any indication, let me stay with you, Dave DeWitt, and then maybe we can go around the table. Any indication about whether this affects the kind of who can run for school board? This used to be, you know, sort of moms and dads interested in their kids' education, and they just pop up and take the time. Can you still do that with this kind of money involved?
I think you can. Wake County might not be the place you want to do that right now because, you know, a lot of the folks who've gotten into school board related issues or gotten run for school board, it takes a lot of time. You do have to put yourself out there, so it's hard for certain people to do that. They have to be able to have the time and sort of personal resources, and that's not true of just school board, but almost any candidate these days. But what I really think is interesting is how much all of this affects voters in Wake County school board races. You know, people who vote tend to vote their own interest, and in school boards, that means really specifically does this school board member going to put a better teacher in my kid's class? Is this school board member going to do something for my specific school and my specific area? You know, it's a very specific thing when you talk about your schools. You know, if you've had kids, or you know, if you're involved in schools now, you're very focused on the minutiae. You're focused on the specific, maybe not as much as all of these other bigger, larger issues. You get more interested in those bigger, larger issues if you think they're somehow negatively or positively impacting you and your family's experience in the school system. So these aren't the same kind of elections as they are for city council or state legislature or president or governor, you know, where you're electing an elected official that may not have direct control over something you do. These are very specific people. These are largely people from your community doing something, schools that you're interested in. So how much of this, you know, 527 and money and all this, how does that affect voters specifically in elections? I don't think we know the answer to that. In 2009, you know, when the school board majority flipped, you only vote in the district in which you're in. You don't vote at large. So it was a very small number of people who voted who enacted that change. You know, and while the Republicans won large majorities, we're still talking a couple of thousand voters in each district. We're not talking, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of voters. So you're talking about very specific small numbers of people that you're trying to reach, targeted with all these ads. How effective is this going to be? We don't really know, because there's no sort of precedent for it, especially in Wake County.
So, Sturgis, what do you think? The impact on school board in general, the amount of money that goes in, who runs and who governs?
Well, I do think that, you know, we're probably seeing a change in who is able to run for the school board. And, you know, one of the things that I think is worth pointing out is this is technically a nonpartisan election. But it doesn't function that way. And so, you know, you're seeing two things happen. You're seeing large quantities of money pouring into these races, and you're also seeing increasing partisanship, where you actually have the involvement of, you know, Democratic and Republican parties. And that's going to make it difficult for a certain kind of candidate to run. It's hard for, you know, there may be somebody who lives down my street who had taught in the schools, who's a real education expert, but if they don't have the right kind of connections, and if they aren't the right kind of candidate, I think it's going to become very difficult for a person like that to mount any kind of a real race and win a seat on the school board.
It's interesting, too, to think about these races, because reassignment and the reassignment policy is at the center of these races. And it affects more than the school district, doesn't it? When you think about, for instance, something like downtown redevelopment, you know, people stay there and think they can invest in it if the schools are good and everybody's going there. If for some reason one section of the city all of a sudden starts seeing a decline in its school system, that has an effect on where the money goes and how development goes. So there are bigger questions involved in this race, Dave DeWitt.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we've seen in the last election in 2009, very late in the election season, we saw a group of Raleigh businessmen get together at the convention center, and they all stood on the stairs and they all supported candidates who supported the diversity policy. And across the board, all these business leaders would say, and the Chamber of Commerce has you know, been on the side of diversity for a long time, although they've now sort of, you know, they see the tea leaves and they sort of move around. But what they all say is, you know, if the city if there are good schools throughout the city, then we won't see this uneven development occur. You know, the other side of that is, if you are selling houses, if you are a realtor in the outskirts of Raleigh, in the suburbs of Wake County, you want to be able to say, these are the schools if you moved into this house, you're going to go to these schools. And we've seen in other parts of the triangle, housing costs and housing, you know, values are fluctuated greatly by what school district you're in. And anybody who lives along the Durham County Chapel Hill line knows that, because if your house is across the street in Chapel Hill schools, your house is worth more because of that. You know, that hasn't largely occurred in Wake County all that much. If you're in this school district or that school district, it doesn't make all that much difference. But you can see it going there, right? If it happens that suddenly now we've got situations where there are going to be good school areas and not good school areas, then you're going to see housing costs change and housing values change dramatically based on where that is.
And Sue Sturgis, we talked about all of the funding and everything being above board, and there are institutes and foundations that each have rules about how they can, the Civitas group. There are two groups. There's a foundation and a different organization. And this week, was it not this week, that there were mailers that went out from Art Pope's Civitas organization this week? And that had a message that was not specifically political, although it felt that way. Can you describe it for us?
Yes, there were mailers that were sent out that were, and this was sent out not by the Civitas Institute, that's the nonprofit organization, but they have a sister organization called Civitas Action, and that is one of these 501c4 organizations. They're called social welfare advocacy organizations, and so they're classified under that part of the IRS tax code where they're nonprofits, but they're allowed to do a little bit more political work than a 501c3 nonprofit, like, for instance, my employer, the Institute for Southern Studies. We're a traditional nonprofit. We're not allowed to engage in any kind of electioneering. And so what Civitas Action did is they sent out flyers supporting the Republican candidates in three of the races. And one of the things, and, you know, they spent $6,000 on it. So that was the big news this week, that there was this report filed at the Board of Elections showing this expenditure. And so the flyers don't come right out and say, vote for so-and-so. You know, what they do is they say, thank these candidates for, you know, supporting Wake County taxpayers and the parents with kids in the schools. So it's a more subtle message than just vote for this person. But, you know, that's one of the changes that we've seen as a result of the Citizens United decision, where suddenly, you know, people are allowed to get involved in elections in ways that they weren't able to in the past.
On the State of Things Today, talking about Wake County elections with Charles Duncan Pardo, editor of the Raleigh Public Record, raleighpublicrecord.org, if you want to find out more about that. Sue Sturgis is online with southernstudies.org, with the Southern Studies Facing South organization, and Dave DeWitt from WUNC. Coming up, a look at Raleigh's mayor's race. Stay tuned to the State of Things. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow, talking this hour about the upcoming Wake County elections. My guests are WUNC's Dave DeWitt. Charles Duncan Pardo is editor of the Raleigh Public Record. Sue Sturgis is a reporter for the Institute for Southern Studies Facing South. Charles, this election is going to bring some new faces to the Raleigh City Council, including the top job, Mayor Charles Meeker stepping down after a decade. Tell us about the candidates looking for that seat.
So there are three candidates running for mayor in Raleigh. Nancy McFarlane is the incumbent on the District A seat, and she's decided to run for mayor this year, and was actually endorsed by outgoing Mayor Charles Meeker earlier this week. But she's always kind of been the Meeker candidate. You know, she's been a big supporter of what he's done on the city council. And she's the owner of a successful pharmaceutical company. And really kind of the interesting part about her candidacy is it's been pretty much self-funded. You know, she, on her most recent election reports, has raised almost $200,000, but $95,000 of that she's loaned herself, and she donated herself another $36,000. So that's just something that stood out for us. But, you know, we've been watching her on the city council for a couple of years, and she's been very strong on the environment. And has really kind of made that her issue regarding keeping runoff out of the noose and issues like that.
I'm going to stop you there, because in the sci-fi world of election funding, can you explain to me what it means for a candidate to lend themselves money for a campaign?
So she lent herself $95,000, and she doesn't have to give that back. She doesn't
herself.
Have to pay herself back. Yeah.
Isn't that kind of like paying money for into your donating to your campaign? Because if you pay yourself back, really, it's you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not holding you accountable for this rule. I'm trying to understand it. Okay. Well, let's move on. So anyway, she's got some money in it. She's the Meeker candidate. Tell us about the others and what's the issue in this race.
So Billy Redman is the Republican candidate, and she's gotten the endorsement by the Wake County GOP. And then the third candidate is Randall Williams, also a Republican. Redman has gotten the endorsement from the Realty Association and the big developers in town. She has brought in a lot of money from real estate interests. She's actually raised $191,000. And the big issues here are going to be looking at kind of Meeker's legacy and how do you, you know, do you want to continue what he's done? He's put a lot of attention into downtown. He's also put a lot of attention into planning for the city. You know, a couple years ago, they went through a huge process and did the 2030 comprehensive plan to lay out how the city will look in the next 20 or 30 years. And now they're going through and rewriting the entire zoning code. So there are some big issues that, you know, Meeker has laid, you know, based his mayoral stuff on for the past couple years. And do the candidates want to continue that? You know, how do voters feel about his legacy of development downtown?
And how do they feel? Is this a contentious race, or is there a feeling that Meeker has done a fine job and this one's going to go pretty smoothly for his assigned or his the candidate who he's benighted and blessed?
It may be close. It's hard to tell right now. You know, Billy Redmond has actually come out and said she supports the downtown development that Meeker's done over the past 10 years. So it's going to be, you know, a close race. And then, you know, the third candidate, Randall Williams, is a OBGYN, and, you know, he's way behind on fundraising. He's raised about $50,000.
And I guess one of the big issues in the mayoral race is the Leitner Center, whether to this $200 million law enforcement center downtown.
Yeah, that is kind of a major ball in the air right now for the city council. One of the things that every 2 years when a new council is about to be elected, they try to clean their plate and get these major issues off the table. But, you know, you've got rewriting the zoning code on the table and the Leitner Center, which has been deadlocked for more than a year. You know, the Raleigh Police Department and does not have a permanent home right now. And that's something that over the next 2 years, this city council is going to have to address.
There are three candidates competing for two at-large seats. Who are we looking at in this race?
So you have two very strong incumbents, both Democrats, Marianne Baldwin and Russ Stevenson. They've both served several terms on the city council and have the support of the Wake Democratic Party and, you know, have – I see them as – you know, pretty strong candidates. And then challenging them is Paul Fitz, and he's a Republican, and he basically the way this works is the two top vote getters will get these two seats.
Interesting race in some ways in District C, and it brought out the most candidates certainly. That's where Eugene Weeks is seeking election to a seat that he was appointed to. Where is District C, and tell us what's going on in that race?
So District C is in Southeast Raleigh, and it's a predominantly black district. And you have five candidates up for this seat. You know, Eugene Weeks, as you said, was appointed to this seat when James West left to take over a seat on the county commission. And Eugene Weeks has served on city boards, but this is, you know, he's 70 years old, and this is going to be an interesting election. You know, he's raised the most money in the District C seat, but he's going up against four people who are younger and have really been pushing and who were unhappy when he was chosen to take over James West's seat.
Well, talk a little bit more about that, because there is unhappiness in the ranks about how this has gone about, and some suggestion that the Democrats need to figure out a way to change some of their old habits when it comes to that district.
Yeah, you know, there's been kind of a clear line of succession there. You know, you had Harold Webb, who was on the county commission, and these are kind of a group of old guard folks from this area. And when Harold Webb had his stroke, the Democratic Party picked James West to move up into that seat. And a lot of people were very upset when the Democrats picked Eugene Weeks. And Sue Sturgis, I believe, lives in this district. She might be able to help me out with these politics a little more.
Sue?
Well, Charles is doing a good job explaining it. And yeah, so I think what we have happening in that district is that there is a surge of young energy that feels like, you know, it's time to shake up the establishment. It's time to let new folks come in and lead. And so, you know, it will be very interesting to see how folks do in this upcoming election. I could just speak from, you know, walking around my neighborhood and looking at the yard signs that it sure looks like Mr. Weeks has a lot of support in that area, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
You know, last month, Raleigh won another national title when Bloomberg Businessweek named it the best city in America. And so depending on who you ask, that designation speaks well of the city's leadership in the past. But on the other hand, there are, you know, big questions going forward. Is there any way that this mayoral election could significantly change the course of the city, Dave DeWitt?
No. And that's simply because the mayor, it's a weak mayoral system. And so the mayor doesn't have much of a power to either make it better or make it worse. Now they can, you know, they can do some things. They have no veto power. They don't have appointment power to, like, the police chief or things like that. But what they do is build a consensus. And what you've seen over the years, quite frankly, you know, since they first started elected mayor separately from city council in the early 70s, you've seen a long series of consensus builders and not necessarily strong politicians, people who especially go on to other, you know, elected office. We've seen a couple of people who've gone on from Raleigh mayor to other, not low level, but not statewide office. And that's different from, say, Charlotte, where you've seen many of the Charlotte mayors run for U.S. Senate or governor. They don't usually win, or they never won. But so, you know, Raleigh mayor is not a position that is, say, as strong as a mayoral position in the Northeast. And in 2009, now, and as Charles pointed out earlier off the air, he pointed out that, you know, not that Charles Meeker had to spend a lot of money running when he was going for reelection, but he spent $48,000 in 2009. You know, Michael Bloomberg in New York City spent $68 million. So, I mean, it tells you that there's a huge difference between a strong mayoral system and a weak mayoral system. And what Raleigh has is a weak mayoral system. And I think, especially when we were talking about the Meeker legacy, you may disagree with sort of some of the things that he's taken positions on, but he's been pretty successful in building consensus for, you know, refurbishing downtown with the Fayetteville Street situation and the convention center. And, you know, he didn't win on the Leitner Center, and that's going to be a mark on his legacy. But he's been a successful mayor in getting what he wanted done in his 10 years in office.
And development has happened, and given the anticipated growth of the city, development will continue. So, Charles, are there divergent paths when it comes to making choices about city leadership, about the kind of development? Are there clear paths that one would take if they were making a choice looking at the candidates?
No. You know, the city council set its path for development for the next 20 years. And, you know, that's going to get revised every year. But, you know, city planners have been pretty clear that, you know, we have these areas that we want to promote dense development in, and that's where it's going to go. And that's already pretty much been approved.
Now, what about the housing bond? There's a $16 million bond, which is small compared to some of the more recent projects. What's the city going to do with that?
Yeah, so the city actually has two bonds on the ballot this year. The housing bond is a $16 million bond, and really it's for affordable housing projects. You know, maybe it's single-family homes or apartment developments. And, you know, affordable housing basically means if you make under a certain amount, then you can qualify for these affordable housing projects. And then one of the unique things in this bond that's different from other ones is they've set aside $1 million to give as loans to repair tornado damage, because there's still a lot of damage left over from the April tornadoes in Raleigh. So a lot of this will go to funding housing programs for seniors and for families.
And then there's a light rail bond as well.
Well, there's a transit bond, which has some light rail stuff in it. But a lot of it, You know, it's a $40 million bond. A lot of, you know, a quarter of that is going to go to resurfacing. They've got a couple big street projects on there. More than a quarter of it will go to sidewalks. And then there's also a bunch of greenway projects in there and bike lanes, which are starting to grow in Raleigh. And then the one of the big pieces in there, it's $3 million to put together this Union Station, which is the city is working with Triangle Transit and the DOT to try and figure out a new solution for a train station in downtown Raleigh. Then they're also talking about actually putting up bus shelters, which is kind of an amazing concept to some in Raleigh. And, you know, the first question anybody has and the last question on these two bonds is, OK, how's it going to raise my taxes? So, you know, for a median home in Raleigh, the median price is about $188,000. The annual increase, according to the city, would be just under $12.
Mm-hmm. For the two bond issues?
For both bonds. Yeah.
So what about turnout in this election? What can we expect now? We've got school board races and the mayor and city council races. Dave DeWitt?
Well, you know, you've got an election season in which clearly, you know, a lot of focus is being put on next year when you've got national and statewide and all of that. And so you've got this sort of local election. And in 2009, you know, we saw this sort of low turnout even for school board. And those were contentious races, not to the level maybe they are now. And a few thousand people made a big difference. And so what I think you've heard, what I've heard from a lot of voters and people who pay attention to voters, they say that, you know, especially I would say on the Democratic side, they are more attuned to not, you know, making a mistake or what they see as a mistake again, which is not going out to vote. So I think you're, you know, for these this particular type of election, you're going to see a pretty good turnout across Wake County in the areas where there's a school board race. Those are getting the most attention in Wake County. Now, there's a lot of areas that don't have school board elections, and there's a lot of confusion about, you know, they've moved the lines. Do people even know now, are they voting for a school board seat or not? So, you know, for people who pay attention, they may have a good idea. There's a lot of people, obviously, who don't and who want to vote. So it's going to be these kinds of decisions, and they're big decisions, will be made by a small number of people.
And, you know, we worry sometimes when a lot of money gets pumped into any kind of a race. But one thing money can do is generate interest if it's pretty well balanced.
Yeah. And we've seen interest for sure. And certainly, you know, in the media outlets, there have been a lot of interest in these races and school board and mayor. We've got a non-incumbent running for mayor for the first time. So that's got a lot of people, I think, interested. But they don't touch the sort of major national or statewide elections. And so you still have, it's going to be a thin slice of the population that are going to make these decisions.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. WUNC Raleigh Bureau Chief Dave DeWitt. Charles Duncan Pardo is editor of the Raleigh Public Record, which you can find online at RaleighPublicRecord.org. And Sue Sturgis is a reporter for the Institute for Southern Studies Facing South. Find them online at SouthernStudies.org. On the state of things, let's see, municipal elections Tuesday. Go out and vote. Thank you all for listening to the State of Things. You can go to our website, stateofthings.org, and our program is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. Ginny Mueller is our intern, Robin Copley, the technical director, managing editor, Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio.